the first time you've heard the intro music, Liza. I get this every time, but not you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another issue, another episode, another release, another MP3 file that we call the Sullivan Talk Show. My name is Josh Withers, and laughing across from me, I can literally reach over and slap her if I needed to. It's Sarah. Hello, Sarah.
Okay, so for the first time ever, Josh and I are actually in the same room recording this podcast, and I just would like you all to visualize the situation that's going on right here.
Describe it.
We are in the garage of Josh's lovely new home in Tugan. The garage, which is actually too small to fit a car into if you wanted to also get out of the car. So that's why it's now Josh's cave / ghetto / dungeon.
Dungeon is the dungeon term I use.
Is your term. Brit uses the term cave, so that's good. So it's Josh's podcasting / working cave, and he has the nerdiest setup I've ever seen, involving like a microphone that's on like a stand that's attached to his desk, but so the microphone doesn't touch the desk, and then a camera that's also on a stand.
These are called boom arms.
Oh, boom arms in the lingo. See, clearly I'm not a nerd like Josh. And also like this fancy like mixing board thing that's got different coloured lights. And
do you want to know what the lights do?
I'm scared, but sure.
So each one of these has got like a sound effect
on it. Of course it does.
I can, if it's scary, I can go something scary like that. Or if we're going to go back in time. So a time that was better, a time before I got teased for my junge dungeon. Or if you tell a joke that doesn't go, just goes nowhere. Or if you're listening to my other podcast where there's the intro, I can do that.
Cool.
Yeah. One more, like if things get a bit... excited here. We want to make it feel like there's a studio audience.
Awesome. Loving it. Loving it.
Welcome to the podcast dungeon, Sarah.
Yeah, awesome. So the reason we are in the same room is because I decided to come to the Gold Coast for a few days, which is pretty nice because it's really nice weather here just at the moment. And so I'm really just hanging out with Josh for a few days. We're working on Sullivan Institute stuff. We're recording some podcast episodes, which is cool. So here we are, like actually in the same room for the first time ever. And it's funny because I've had a few people when we first started doing this podcast say, so are you like flying to Queensland every few weeks?
It's a big production
to do this podcast. No, the answer is no. I'm usually sitting at my desk in Melbourne and Josh is here in his podcast dungeon and he makes the magic that makes it all go together. But this time we're in the same room, which is kind of cool.
It is kind of cool. Welcome to Queensland.
Thanks.
So that's the official welcome to Queensland.
Yay. Yeah. Where else but Queensland?
Exactly.
Or something.
I just wanted to highlight to everyone how good Queensland is, because I know some people haven't been to Queensland. You and I went to New South Wales this morning to run an errand and have some breakfast, and we're coming back. Do you want to describe the transition from New South Wales to Queensland?
Well, the road surface was a little bit different, but I first would just like to point out that we had to go to New South Wales to have breakfast.
Yeah, because it's like literally a couple of hundred metres away. Like, it's my local neighbourhood.
So we entered New South Wales and we were coming back and the road surface was pretty dodgy, and then we came upon the Welcome to Queensland sign and suddenly... the road surface was lovely.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I wanted to issue a disclaimer at the start of this episode as well. Normally Sarah would be recording from her home in Melbourne, and if I knew that a plane was about to take off, I would just mute my microphone and let you talk. But instead today, both microphones can hear airplanes because I literally live under the flight path of Gold Coast Airport. And today, I've told Sarah, it's true, but I'm telling everyone, that the planes are taking off over our house because of the way the wind goes. Whereas most of the time, planes will be landing over our house, which is a much quicker, quieter experience. So you might hear some planes, and that's a little bit of fun, isn't it? It's a little bit of fun.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
This is the Sullivan Talk Show, where we are two celebrants and we talk, and this is a show. It's very literal.
It's true.
And I feel like it's worth noting as well, because some people might not know that there's a website called celebrant.institute, so www.no.com, and we also run that, which is a membership site where people can come and read and ask questions, and we deliver beautiful insight and things that are helpful, and we technical things and legal things and marketing things. And this podcast, it's kind of like the director's commentary to the website.
Sure. Yes. That. Yes. Sort of.
Yeah, it's like the DVD extra.
Yes, but usually the film that you're doing the commentary to comes first, and in this instance, the podcast came first.
Yeah, it's like a reverse director's commentary. So like, we sit here and talk about the kind of film we'd like to make, and then we go and make it.
Yeah, we're a little bit mental. Sorry about that, everybody. The Celebrant Institute is really cool, and I think that we're doing really good work over there. And I would just, I think that some of our listeners are Celebrant Institute members, and they seem to be getting some good help and assistance out of it, which is cool. But I think the other thing that I'd like to highlight that Josh and I are doing is that both of us have forever been doing a lot of advocacy work on behalf of celebrants. You know, we contact the Attorney General's Department, or we contact Births, Deaths and Marriages and say, hey, this isn't working, or that's not right, or, you know, we argue on behalf of our other celebrants that things could be better. And, you know, some of that sometimes actually, like, comes out on top. Like, we actually win a little battle, and I think that it's cool that we can do that, and we can put that stuff on the Celebrant Institute and share it with our members and say, hey, we're doing good work here. I think we're doing good work.
I am. I look across the Celebrant kind of community in Australia, and there's associations, and there's Facebook groups. God bless the Facebook groups. and then there's a few kind of professional network kind of non-association associations, and everyone's doing different work, but I feel especially proud of what we do. I know it's like it's quite easy for us to beat our own drum, but honestly, it's actually not in Australian culture and just in, you know, our culture. It's kind of weird to beat our own drum, but I look at everything that's happening. I think like the industry is in a really nice place. Like it's cool, and I'm glad that we get to serve the part that we serve. You know, we were reminiscing this morning over breakfast over. You've been a celebrant for six,
5 years, 5 years, 5.5 years.
Yeah, I thought it was coming up to six. I'm a celebrant 10 years in May, and it's a different landscape today, isn't it?
Very different. It's different even from when I became a celebrant. That's only 5 years ago. And, you know, when I became a celebrant, there were no Facebook groups of celebrants. And
what a time. What a time to be alive.
I know. But there weren't even, you know, like there. It wasn't really even a thing that you contacted other celebrants and said, hey, can I take you out for a coffee and pick your brain a bit? That just didn't really seem to happen. And I meet lots of people now who say, I never knew any other celebrants. Like, I've been a celebrant for 10 years, and for the first 5, 6, 7 years, I didn't know anybody else, because I tried to get into some of the established groups, and they were all older people who weren't happy about younger people coming in and taking their work.
That's
and
my story.
Yeah, so they kind of said, no, you can't be one of us. And now I think it's really cool that there are lots of younger celebrants coming through and who are banding together and working together for the greater good to make our whole industry better as a whole, which is really cool. Because, you know, I know that I can't marry every single couple. So wouldn't it be better if I was surrounded by a bunch of people who I didn't see as my competition, but who I saw as my colleagues, who I knew that if I wasn't able to marry every single couple, at least I knew that the other couples were in capable hands.
The other beautiful aspect, as we kind of build community, as we get to know each other, there's a number of celebrants who have come to weddings with me, and I am, for those celebrants that if you hear this, like, you're welcome, and so it's not like you weren't a burden, but I always go back and forth on whether I'm like a celebrant to be joining me, because I know, I kind of get in the zone and I have planes flying over. but I kind of get in the zone and I don't know whether me being watched is indicative of me doing a ceremony. I think way too much about it. But I hope that I've been a blessing to those people that have come out and either shouted me a coffee or, you know, gone to a wedding or whatever it might have been. But I think as we build that community, we see more celebrants being celebrants. I think that's really helpful, because I think I've seen it. I think I've said it on this podcast before, and if not, I've at least talked to you about it. But I look at wedding photographers. I've got a lot of close friends who are wedding photographers, and they get to see each other's work, and they get to form their own kind of psychosis of that. Like, some of them, you know, like, it's detrimental. Like, I looked at James's work and his is so good and mine isn't that good. And like, I suck. Or some people can be like, I saw James's work and it's really inspiring and I'm going to take these steps to become better, whether it's going to a course, buying a different camera, learning these skills, going to a workshop, going to a conference, whatnot. And I've forever been desperately advocating for celebrants just to be better, because I became a celebrant because I saw a ceremony that was terrible. And it's funny, I hear more and more today that celebrants saw a ceremony that was good and they became a celebrant because of that. And I'm like, that is so good. I'm so glad to hear that, because so many of us became a celebrant because we saw a bad celebrant. And so I hope that tide's slowly changing. And if you became a celebrant because you saw a good celebrant, I'm so glad you're here.
I did. That was my story, yeah. I became a celebrant because I saw a good celebrant. But I was actually amused because the first ceremony that I saw him do was my cousin's ceremony. And in fact, it was 6 years and 2 days ago, on the 6th of April 2013. And he was amazing and it was great, and I thought he was so authentic and like he really sounded like he knew them and blah, 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 and it was so great. And then hilariously, 6 months later, I went to another ceremony that he did, and it was word for word the same. But that's his gift. His gift is that he could make every word sound like it was the first time he'd ever said it. And every statement that he made about that couple sound completely authentic and completely like this was completely personalized, even though it totally wasn't at all. And that's quite a gift.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'm in that zone. I don't know if I'm in as much of that zone, but I'm on the road to that zone. Like, I'm on the road to that way. If you turn off at halfway, I'm down there somewhere.
Yeah.
Because not all of my ceremonies in no way are word for word the same. But I also, like, if you sit down and dissect my ceremony, like, if you get a transcript, you'll actually see, like, if you look at the words on the page, there's actually not a lot of personal information there. But it feels very personal. And there is personal information there. Like, it's not like, hey, you two getting married people. Like, I do call them by their names. And I do reference parts of their relationship and parts of their, you know, why they're getting married. But I don't spend all day on it.
Yeah. And we talked in the last podcast, you talked about how, you know, stand-up comedians have bits.
Yeah.
And that you have bits. And that you can pull out different bits depending on what the crowd is doing and that sort of thing. My bits are written down.
Yeah.
But I have bits as well, because the people who tell me that they write every ceremony from scratch, I feel a bit confused about, because I'm not sure how many different ways there are to say, we're now going to introduce putting on the rings. Like, surely you say that the same way or similar ways.
Me?
Well, anybody.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's, you know, there's, it's the same when I do a funeral, you know, I will write the eulogy from scratch, but there's only so many ways I can say, we're now going to watch a slideshow accompanied by some music and please, you know, enjoy the memories. Like, you can only say that in so many ways, so I'm not going to write that from scratch every time.
I think that is a real challenge, like, slideshow now we watch. Watch thy slideshow. May all your eyes gaze towards the screen that the slides will be on.
I'm pretty sure you're still going to run out of ways, though, after like 200 of them.
Everybody stop, collaborate, and look up there. No, there's ways. We can find ways.
There may be ways, but they may not be appropriate for funerals.
Hey, fuckers, look at the wall. Don't say that.
Don't say that. So, you know, I do have...
If you do, I need the video.
Anyway, I do have a template with lots of different ways of saying, you know, I have a template with lots of different paragraphs about love and marriage that I'll, you know, choose one that fits with that couple, and then I'll put in some of the stuff that they've written about what love and marriage means to them, but probably the structure of that is still going to look pretty similar. Anyway, that's actually not what I wanted to talk about. The reason that I wanted to talk about our advocacy work on the Celebrant Institute was because I just wanted to talk quickly about two things that we've done quite recently that I think are cool.
Yeah.
So the first one is about your little win with the electronic signing, which I think, or the electronic viewing of documents, which we talked about in the last episode.
Yeah.
And I think it's just worth remembering that that's super cool. But the other one is one that I published on the Celebrant Institute this week, and it's about maiden names after a person has been married. So the old guidelines, the 2014 guidelines, said if a party to a marriage has been married before and they are still using their previous married name in their day-to-day life, they can choose whether they use their current name, like as in their previous married name, or their birth name on their new marriage paperwork, as long as they can show you a series of documents that shows the link between those names, they can choose. Because the whole point of changing your name through marriage by usage and not doing a legal change of name is that you maintain access to your birth name. So therefore, you should be able to use that. The guidelines that were published last year said if a party to a marriage has been married before and they are currently using their previous married name, they must use that married name on their marriage paperwork. So I wrote to the Attorney General's Department on the 1st of August last year. And actually, no, first of all, I queried it during the consultation phase of the guidelines. And they wrote back and said, you don't understand what we're talking about, which was really helpful. And
super respectful as well, which is
super
nice.
Super respectful. Because they said change of name by usage is different from change of name by marriage, which it isn't. It's the same thing, but moving along. So then I wrote to them on the 1st of August and they never responded. And so I followed up with them on the 1st of September and they still didn't respond. So I followed up with them again on the 3rd of March, or like the 28th of February or something. And finally on the 8th of March, I got a response that said, oh, yes, you are correct. That is a problem and we will change the guidelines. Yes, I have won. Awesome.
When I was a young man growing up in North Queensland, myself and my friends, we did a few stupid things. And one time we went into the police station and we saw our photos on the wall. And I wonder whether at the Attorney General's Office marriage celebrant section, whether there's photos of our heads on the wall, like, do not reply to these people.
I just think there's a klaxon that goes off anytime an email comes through from my address that says, here comes another one. Beware, she's a troublemaker.
I'm so certain that no one from the marriage celebrant section listens to this podcast. But if you do, I promise to respect your privacy. If you just send us an email, say, hey, there's one listener here. And we'll, like, if you can let us know what to do with that. But it would just bring me joy if someone emailed us at hello at Sullivan.fm.
That would be super cool. Wouldn't that be cool?
That'd be kind of cool and weird.
So, yeah, I just wanted to say, hey, we're advocating for all of our celebrant buddies and we hope that we're making good changes in the world. And I think that's cool.
I also wanted to put some words around the Celebrant Institute because we're coming up to our 1 year anniversary. We've been doing it for 1 year. And I know that along that way, some people might have joined the journey that weren't there at the start of it, that don't really know the purpose, they don't know our why. And I don't, like, you and I probably haven't ever articulated, like, a mission statement or a sentence, but I'll try and say it, and you can correct me or give your own view on it. But our why has always been that we would just like to see planes fly over the podcast continually. And that's why we recorded this one. I feel like we've picked a really busy time to record. Normally I record podcasts in here and get like one plane and I just mute the mic for that period, but nonetheless, here we go. So our why for the podcast is the same as our why for the Institute. That we just desperately want celebrancy to be better. That our couples, that the 100,000 couples a year that get married by a civil celebrant, will just have a really good wedding and a really good, meaningful, special good ceremony, a ceremony that they walk out going, yes, I'm so glad that celebrant married us. Because as you mentioned earlier, we can't marry everyone. And so it's ridiculous for us to think that we can try and be number one. like I want to say number one, like Josh Withers marriage celebrant number one, or Sarah Eyre number one. Like, it's just, it's a notion that can't exist. Because if you are serving the most number of couples, like, I'd like to know what that number is. I know someone said that they did 300 in a year once, and I'm like, that is, if that's not paperwork only, then that's crazy, because that's...
It hurts my head.
Yeah, but anyway, so trying to be number one, it's just it's a race to a place that you don't want to get to. it's like going full speed down a dead end street. It's going to crash soon. And so acknowledging that, and then also acknowledging that Sarah and I, individually, and then as friends, we believe that we've got something to offer other celebrants. Once again, like, we're not everything. Like, we're just, you know, we're not the number one teacher. Well, I actually do think you're the best, you know, celebrant teacher in the country.
Thanks.
But then we do have something to offer. And the reason that there's a price on the Institute is just because we want people to be invested into it. Because if, we want you to be opt in and say, hey, I'm part of this. Here's $5 a month or $10 a month if you're after the first 50. And I'm in. And I'm all in on this. And then, secondly, we put a lot of work into this. And I'll be honest with you, like, at the current rate, like, it's not, like, we're not, our effort isn't being matched by income. And we're okay with that, because that's a business decision we've made. Because, like, with any business, like, the first year of any business, you're not, you know, like, very few businesses are rolling in cash, going on Maldives holidays and driving Lamborghinis. I think that's probably a year three thing for us.
It's a good goal for year three.
Yeah. Get the Lambo out. but we think it's I think we deserve to be compensated. And I'm not ashamed to say that. So that's kind of our thing, that we just want celebrancy to be better. And so we identified, well, there's a few things we could do. We like to talk. We're talkers, and I know how to make a podcast. We should make a podcast, and we both like to write, and we should write, and we'll divvy it up like this. And then, as far as topics, so I think you and I can address these certain kind of topics, like business management, marketing, ceremony presentation, legals. Have I missed anything?
Funerals. We do some funerals stuff too.
Funerals is definitely more your thing than mine.
Yeah.
I might have opinions, but they're probably not valid.
Yeah, like how to introduce a slideshow.
Once more, that's a fuck nut. if anyone wants to get the blog post, Josh's top 50 ways to introduce a slideshow, shoot us an email, and if I get enough people asking for it, I'll publish that article. That'd be great. So that's our why, and I'm really proud to say that we're going into our second year.
Hang on, I want to interrupt on the why, because...
Well, yeah, I was about to hand over to you.
Oh, okay, good. Well, I'm just going to interrupt now. So, Josh's why is mainly about producing amazing ceremonies and making couples really happy that we were their celebrant, and that's part of my why too. But the other part of my why is making sure that couples actually get appropriate legal advice from us about marriage stuff, because sometimes I speak to celebrants and they go, oh, I've never done a shortening of time. People ring me and I go, nope, you can't have that. Huh. I don't really know if they can or not, but I'm too scared to find it out, so I just tell them they can't. And that's not really okay. So, you know, I think I've always said I don't expect people to have the kind of knowledge about the legal stuff that I do, because I've just got one of those brains that sucks in knowledge. But I do hope that we can provide a platform for people to ask questions, so that instead of just saying to a couple, no, you can't have that or whatever, that what they instead say is, let me go find that out for you and I'll come back to you and report back. And then they can come and ask me the question and I can give them the answer and they can go back to that couple, so that couple gets appropriate legal advice.
I in no way want to shame anyone that's asked a question of Sarah that falls into this category. And I'm glad that you actually felt comfortable enough to ask it, because, like, thank God. But I hope that once you've had an answer, you'd be like, ah, that was a stupid question, because, God, you get some stupid questions.
But that's okay. There are no stupid questions. The only stupid questions are the ones that you don't ask that cause you to make a mistake. And I'm, you know, I would much rather that I spend time answering questions that might seem simple to me, than for people to make a terrible mistake. And here comes the plane again. It's a lot of planes, mate.
Here comes the plane.
It's a lot of planes. I don't want people to make mistakes. I don't want people to give bad advice. I just want them to ask me, and I want them to feel comfortable to ask us, and I hope they do. I think it was in my first or second year as a celebrant, somebody asked me a question that I was completely horrified by the fact that she thought that that was the right answer. And I went and spoke to my training mentor about it, and I said, I feel like I need to report this person to the Attorney General's Department, because if she's asked me this question for her 50th wedding, what's she been doing for everything else?
Oh, wow, yeah.
And my training mentor, Cheryl Lansbury, hi, Cheryl, she said to me, if you start reporting people, they'll stop asking you. And isn't it better that they have a safe place to ask questions and get the right answer than to feel that they can't ask because they might get reported? So I did sit back and go, yeah, actually, that's totally correct. So that's another reason why we made the Celebrant Institute, in the hope that, this provided a safe platform for people to ask questions.
See, it's funny. I never thought to report anyone until I'd been in my first few years, I probably got reported like 5 or 6 times, and not for anything valid. Well, there was a Facebook incident where someone screenshotted stuff, and so that was valid in a weird way. But anyway, but I had celebrants that were attending ceremonies. I think they felt bad that they weren't the celebrant and that I was, and so they make up stuff, or they were just angry about the way I presented my ceremony, because I always said the monotone. I always say the legal vows properly. I just don't say it like some people have in the past.
You use words to that effect.
Well, you know what? When it comes to the monotone, I actually just say the monotone. Like, I don't even use words to that effect, because I'm just so aware now that every arsehole is going to make a complaint. But I just don't go, you know, hey, guys, now I've got to say something the government told me to say. I hope you're not embarrassed about this. And even before marriage equality, I'll just say it. I'd actually tell my couples, I said, because they would have concerns about the very direct nature of the old monotone. And I'd say, look, there's 2 ways we can do it. If you want me to say something about how we're embarrassed about it, I said, we can. Like, it's your wedding. I can do whatever you want. But highlighting it so much actually draws more attention to it. Whereas if I just kind of actually just... It's like giving a dog a pill. You're just going to squish it into the rest of the food and hope he swallows it, which is how I've always delivered the monotone. But anyway, I'm glad you didn't report people, because as someone who's been reported, like, it sucks.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And I think that was really good advice that Cheryl gave me, that they need a safe place to come and ask questions. And that was much better. So now I just give as much information as I can to all of the people, and I try really hard to roll my eyes internally rather than in front of people, because very occasionally I do get a question that I go, what? Anyway, something else just came to me. Oh, yes, you talking about marriage equality statements and the monotone. I don't think you're in the Facebook group discussed. It's not a celebrant one. It's a wedding industry one. Okay. It's about equality in the wedding industry. And it was first put together when the White magazine disaster happened.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, just Google White magazine marriage equality and you'll know. Anyway, there's a Facebook group of wedding professionals from all over the country who are supporters of marriage equality. And one of them, I think she's a photographer. She's a lesbian photographer in a lesbian relationship. And she was at a ceremony last week where the celebrant said the old monotone.
Oh, gosh.
And she went up to the celebrant afterwards and she said, just checking, like, that wording is not legal anymore. And she went, I give my couples a choice. They can have whichever one they want.
Wow.
And so this photographer was asking in that group, like, should I make a complaint? And we were like, hell yes, you should. That kind of thing needs to be reported, because totally, that's actually illegal and immoral, really.
Yeah.
Like, hideous.
Because when you say marriage in Australia, there's only a single definition of that now.
Yeah, correct. It's between two people.
Yeah.
It is not between a man and a woman, and that's not okay. Oh, I give my couples a choice. It was really interesting to read the comments because a lot of people were like, if she'd been apologetic and it had been an accident and, you know, memory and she doesn't do very many weddings and blah, 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 but she was completely open about the fact that she defies the law, which is just frightening.
See, and I've done it from muscle memory once, but I corrected myself in the moment.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember the first sort of 3 months after the law changed, there was lots of, oh, my God, I pronounced them Mr. and Mrs. by accident or by husband and wife, you know, just because those words are so ingrained and that's what came out, but you correct yourself in the moment. This was not muscle memory.
Yeah.
This was a person directly making a decision to defy the law. And that's not okay. And I hate to think how many people are actually doing that.
There are a large number of flights today. I'm extremely sorry. There is never this many flights. I don't actually know what's happening.
Obviously, just it's school holidays.
It is school holidays.
Maybe there are more flights for school holidays. Sorry, everyone, but you'll just have to cope.
I just had a thought on that, and I've
monotum equality because the plane was going over. How many people are saying the old monotum? We do also know this is really interesting. Exactly like you were just saying, that a lot of us used to make a statement in support of marriage equality if the couple asked us to. We do know that there are now celebrants who are offering a statement in support of quotation marks traditional marriage.
No, no, no.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
And they're being asked to do it. So they're saying marriage is the union of two people, but X and Y believe that traditional marriage is only between a man and a woman.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. Okay. So that's like, I knew that was happening, but I didn't know that there were actually people, like, going out there and saying the wrong monotone on purpose.
It's terrible. Where my head was going, so I just actually wanted to tell a funny story. And I don't know whether this is just a Josh thing, but – because my ceremonies are not scripted and I do have the couple's names, like I write them down before the ceremony and put them on little notes in my pocket just as a backup. But for the couples that aren't male and female that I've married, it takes a lot of brain power, because if you've got Jack and Jill in front of you, what, like, generally speaking, Jack's quite identifiable as Jack and Jill is quite identifiable as Jill. And it stresses me out. Like, I haven't made an error. I've been fine. But I'm really worried that I'm going to make a mistake by saying, like, Susan and Jill. And I call Jill Susan and Susan Jill. And I'm like that keeps me up at night. So I haven't made that mistake, but it freaks me out.
I'm with you. I'm totally like that. And even before marriage equality, I remember there was one male couple that I did a commitment ceremony for who I did marry on the first day that the law changed. And Dan and Cam. So, you know, similar names as well.
Yeah.
And for the first few meetings, like, I would have seen them like 3 times before the ceremony. And the first meeting, I was like, okay, I've got it down. Then before I got to the second meeting, I was like, shit, which one's which again? And it's like, it's horrible to think that, but it's hard, man.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing that's really tricky, and I know that you won't know this because you don't write a script, but when you're writing a story or a script about a couple, when it's a male-female couple, you'll say, he thinks blah, 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 and she says blah, blah, blah. When it's two women or two men and you say, she thinks, you've got to actually identify which she.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It can be quite there's quite some grammatical, like, acrobatics to get through to make the sentence not have too many names in it and still make sense so you know who you're talking about.
Modern life is hard, hey?
Oh, just, so much, man.
Wasn't it good back there in the 50s? It was so much easier. God, what?
It's just a really interesting kind of side effect of being able to marry couples of all genders that I hadn't even considered before marriage equality, that we might have to, like, reconsider the way we write, and that grammar would be a bit tricky and identifying people in ceremony might be a bit difficult, or just we would have to think of other ways of doing that. So I think it's kind of interesting. Anyway.
I'm actually really jealous of, say, Luna and her generation as they grow up, as all of this is so normal. Because I hope everyone would know, before we even recorded this, that Sarah and I are 100% affirming all in. Like, we're just We're all in on
whoever, whatever.
Yeah. But there's just a lot of brain shit going on. Like, I had breakfast with a friend the other day, and she has got a gorgeous little boy. And he might be two, maybe. Just a like a good-looking little kid. You know, like, looks like a model. And he's got long hair, and he had tied back in a ponytail. And I know that he's a boy. I just know it. But, of course, I said she. I just, like, my brain couldn't just, like, couldn't function in that space. I'm like, God, my brain is effed up.
All of our brains are, because we've been, you know, we've had 30 however many years of this is what is a girl and this is what is a boy.
Yeah.
I think after, it was early last year, Precious and I, Precious is a Melbourne celebrant who I'm good friends with, we met.
Precious isn't a state of being.
Also that. We met with a trans advocate, Koshiva, who I believe that I did talk about at the time, but Koshiva identifies as non-binary. And I found it really difficult to remember to use they, them pronouns, because what I saw in front of me was a woman. I saw a feminine haircut, jewelry, makeup, breasts, hips, and a skirt. And that, to me, those things together equaled woman. So I found it really difficult. I was really struggling. And a few times I did call them she or her. And they would just gently remind me, not a girl, not she. But that's like, it's hard to retrain our brains, and we do have to retrain them, and that's okay as long as we're trying.
Yeah. One final thing on gender, because I, like, we've all got friends, family, everyone that, and maybe you're even listening and you're like, it's all bullshit. And you're welcome to have that. I don't hate you for that. I don't think you're right. But I listened to a podcast by a guy who calls himself Science Mike, Mike McCarg, and he's not an academic and not a scientist. Just loves it. Just loves a good research. Like, his personality type is one where he'll just read for days and loves to regurgitate that back. So Ask Science Mike is a show where he answers questions, and he kind of lives in the faith / spirituality / science / like, he just loves talking about all that, and it's just a really interesting show. He's very authentic and very open and very honest, and just a lovely guy. Like, even if you got to a point where you didn't like what he had to say, you couldn't help but just like him. He's just a likable guy, and he because he's also affirming and affirming of all people, but he had people asking questions about gender. So he went down this really awesome study of gender from a purely like a scientific kind of genetics biology point of view, and it's a well held view in the scientific community that there isn't two genders, that male, female. But the closest you get to that is like, well, some people have got vaginas and some people have got penises, and so. So they're penis people and vagina people, but male and female.
Social constructs.
Yeah, so they're just social constructs.
Yeah.
So it's not a scientifically recognized identification. That I think I might have the number slightly wrong, but I think he said that there's 50 odd genders as recognized by different scientific communities, and I thought that was just fascinating because. On one side, you can go down the route of like, cool, okay, you're not a male, you're not a female. I accept you, I love you. You know, you're a bit of bullshit, but you know, but when you actually look at it through that lens, you're like, oh, they're actually not full of shit.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, this is them. Like, they've just been bold enough to actually stand up and say something in a society that finds it really hard to accept. And I'm like, man, go you for actually having the balls having the guts to stand up and say something. Because I, you know what, like if I felt that way, I'm a fairly bold person who generally doesn't care too much about what people think, and I don't know whether I would have the gall to stand up and say I identify as non-binary or wherever you stand on that. I don't know. I don't know whether I'd have the guts to do that.
And it's so interesting when you read a bit about like Eastern cultures and other Asian cultures and stuff, like male, female, the male, female binary is very much a Western social construct.
Yeah.
You know, there are, I think, I can't remember which Asian island it is, but like there's some place that they recognize five genders. Like that's normal for their community that they recognize five different genders. So it's pretty interesting, the gender stuff, the gender and sexuality stuff. Last year I ran an OPD topic on kind of awareness around gender and sexuality concepts and terminology and stuff. And it's really funny to me that I kind of have often had this assumption that somebody who identified as gay or who was a person of colour or whatever would, because they have suffered some kind of discrimination themselves, would therefore be a better person than the average straight white person who has probably not suffered much discrimination at all. And I was really interested to have a gay male in one of my classes last year who, when we were talking about people who identify as trans, were saying, can't we just call them it? And when we and I had
so
to
remember, what you're saying is that gay guys can be assholes too.
Well, what I'm saying is that just because you might be gay or you might be a person of color or you might be a person with a disability or whatever, doesn't also mean that you're not an asshole, and that you might not also be bigoted in other ways. Or and that has been a bit of an eye-opener to me, to be honest.
That's amazing.
You know, like I often have assumed that Asian people or people of colour, particularly in the United States, would be less racist. No. Like some of the most racist people that I know are African-American people or Asian people or whatever. Like it's kind of reverse racism, but they're super racist.
Yeah.
Just because you are in a minority yourself doesn't mean you're not an asshole about other minorities. Or fascinating, right? People.
Have you met people before? People. Who would have thought that we would have just spent the last 42 minutes talking about gender?
You know, I just want to say something else about gender norms and about language, because this is something I personally am really struggling with, and that is the language around like a girl and like a boy.
Like throw like a girl.
Yeah. Now, and I've watched this space. I'm so fascinated by language that I've been reading about language evolutions and the importance of using, you know, inclusive language and all that sort of kind of thing. And then I was at a wedding last week and there was a wasp and one of the groomsmen was running around like squealing because of this wasp. And I was like, oh, don't be such a girl. And then I went, oh my God, what did I just say?
You're one of them.
But it's so ingrained.
It is, yeah, yeah.
And it's frightening that even for someone like me who is so widely read and who teaches in this space, that it just came out.
And for those of you that are hearing that and being like, oh, well, what do you mean? Because at the same conversation about a different word, I've got family members that when something isn't that great, like if my travel plans, if the flight got cancelled, or if a food we were cooking didn't turn out, they would proclaim that's gay.
Yeah.
I said that when I was in high school.
Yeah.
That was the thing that we said in society. That when
and it was,
wasn't
that
good,
was normal.
It was, that's gay. And what you're saying, and I've just kind of said it, but I'll reverse it up, is when you're saying that's gay, you're saying being gay is not that good.
Yeah.
Or when you're saying you throw like a girl, you're saying, well, you're not throwing like a man.
You're
like,
yeah, you're not throwing well.
You're not throwing
girls
well.
Girls don't throw well, and therefore you are not throwing. It was so interesting to me that kind of concept is just so ingrained that it just came out without me even thinking about it. And suddenly I went, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Language is hard. Language. But we need to work hard. We need to work to make it better.
Particularly because we had a few topics we wanted to get to in this episode. And we're going to bump them out to another episode. we'll pre-record a few. But I the reason that this is important to me, and I know it's to you, and the reason we're recording this in a celebrant podcast is because we say things. Like, we're literally employed to get on a mic and say things. We're literally employed to do something that 99.9% of the population is shit scared to do, which is to public speak. And so when you've got the microphone, that's a large level of responsibility. And if you just heard me say that, I thought, no, it's not, then please retire as a celebrant today, because you have a large,
massive power
and responsibility that you're quite literally breathing into existence a situation where people get married and you're defining their marriage. Even if, like, I'm not stupid. I don't think people walk away and, like, they're 2 weeks into their marriage and, like, oh, remember what Josh said? Yeah, we should do better. Like, they're not doing that. But we're encouraging them. And we are the people that are leading that moment. We're framing it for them, and we're putting that taste and that smell and that sensation, and they're saying, this is what kind of marriage they're having. And for the crowd, we're saying, this is what kind of marriage they're having. This is how we as a society celebrate their marriage. That every I'm so aware that every ceremony I create, I'm slowly shifting the needle, the smallest increment, one way towards where I believe we should be. And that if I do that 1,000 times, then I've shifted the needle 1,000 times in the smallest increment, and maybe we've shifted it dramatically over 1,000 times. And so what we say matters. That if we're in, and I would never do this, and I hope no one listening to this podcast would ever do this, but if we're in a ceremony and someone drops the ring and we say, that's gay.
Yeah.
we've gone back 1,000,000 miles.
Yeah.
Because what we say matters.
Yeah, it totally does. So true. We get paid to talk. We need to say good things.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting. There was a discussion in one of my celebrant groups the other week about something that a couple really wanted the celebrant to say, and the celebrant went, I'm really not saying that because it's really not okay. And how to have that conversation with the couple.
Yeah.
That was quite interesting as well. And we talk in the funeral space, we talk about it quite a bit as well, around, you know, being careful about not saying anything negative about the person. But also, as somebody who is a non-religious believer, I also have to be careful around if a couple asks me to make a religious statement. And, you know, I will often say to up, if you want me to read the Lord's Prayer, I'll bloody read the Lord's Prayer. But I will also tell you that it might be more meaningful if you have someone from your church community who believes in those words, read it for you.
Yeah.
That it might be more authentic and it might be more meaningful, and, you know, that might work better for you. And it's
particularly with funerals, even more so than weddings, you're shaping how everyone is talking about their passing. An example I just think of right now is that, I feel like this isn't a thing that would really be said from a funeral celebrant point of view. But if you said they're in a better place now, what? Well, let's just think about what does that mean?
Mm.
Like, because there's a belief structure around it, and maybe you're innocently by saying that you're commenting on where they were before death and after, and if I was doing funerals, I wouldn't say they're in a better place now. But you also don't want to say, well, that's that then. Dusted, done, good. See you later, John. Never to be seen again. End of story. Thanks for having me. My name is Sarah Ed, celebrant. If you're dying, give me a call. Like, you just, yeah, because what we say matters.
Yeah.
Is that how you do your ceremonies?
Yeah, it's totally how I do them every time.
My phone number is 041.
Every time. In fact, I had this similar conversation about wording at funerals with a highly experienced funeral celebrant, and he said that when he does suicide funerals, he does not say anything about them not being in pain anymore, and that, you know, this was an end to their suffering, because he believes that that is telling everyone in the audience that the way to end their suffering is to end their life.
Yep.
And when he explained that to me, intellectually I went, yeah, that makes total sense. I don't want to give permission or tell people that they should end their life because then their suffering will be over, blah, blah, blah. But if it's important to the family to recognize that this person has been mentally ill or whatever it is for a long time, and now they're not suffering anymore, and they take some comfort from that. There's also something important about that as well.
Yeah.
It's really tricky.
It's a very nuanced situation. I know when I was a journalist for Fairfax, if you don't know this, I'm sorry that I'm the one to break it to you, but when there's news that says there's a police incident at Central Station today, generally that means suicide.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to publicise the suicide. And I'm willing to see that they have had the best advice given to them on how to communicate that, like, yes, there are police at the place, but no, we're not going to say what it is. And that they've been given the best advice by psychological or other intelligent people that have said that's how we should communicate that, and that's fine. But then even in the media, how would we communicate other suicide, maybe if it's a well-known person, that kind of thing. And you know what? There's no real direct rules. It's a sensitive bloody area. And
you know the other issue with police incident, though? We live in a world of terrorism.
Yeah, okay. So,
and when you say correct, when you say there's a police incident at blah blah, my actual first thought is never suicide or health related. My first thought in 2019 is there's a bomb.
Yeah.
Or there's a terrorist incident. And it is tricky. It's really tricky. The other thing, this is just a thing, if you've been paying any attention to language stuff recently, we no longer say committed suicide.
Ah.
Because that committed, you commit a crime.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you commit a sin.
And yeah. Well, particularly from, because Catholic and Christian dogma influenced our laws and our society for so long, and the way we would talk about things, that Catholic dogma, I think this might have been backstepped recently, but up until recent times, suicide, and in many circles, still is viewed as a sin.
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah.
So the language now is around either completed suicide.
Completed, gosh.
Or simply suicided.
Yeah.
They're using suicide as a verb now. But that's another interesting evolution around language, is not to use the word committed, because committed is for sins and for crimes.
Yeah.
And on a similar note, battles with cancer.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because there's an element of lost the battle with cancer. Well, if they just fought a bit harder, they'd still be here. You know, it's... Wow. Language is hard, and it's important, and we need to think about it.
And I know I feel like I've been trying to, well, not wrap it up, but try and put a bow in this topic for about 10, 20 minutes now. But,
sorry.
But this is all good stuff, and I hope everyone's enjoying it. In fact, if you can still hear us talking about this, you're either enjoying it or you don't know how to pause a podcast or skip. And I feel sorry for you that you don't know how to use your device like that. And maybe send us an email and I'll help you. When it comes to the wedding industry stuff, like even just how we talk in a marketing sense, like just last week I was the MC of an event called Groomfest, which is touring the country. And I believe, I think the last one might have happened already, but every capital city is where Groomfest was. And hopefully coming back next year, really good event. And I struggled with whether I wanted to do it or not, because all of my goals in wedding industry communication is talking to couples, two people getting married. And because for so long it's been, Queensland Brides magazine, Queensland Brides Wedding Expo. If you had a Facebook page, you'd get on and say, hey, brides, Josh here, I'm doing a special. The next bride to book me will get a 50% bride special. And is it like that kind of language is very exclusionary, because if the word bride doesn't apply to you, then that means you don't like that's not for you. If I'm like, hey, anyone named Sarah, come to me now, we'll give you $50, that excludes everyone whose name isn't Sarah. And so I've always been one to focus on, we don't say bride anymore. And the reason that I put some weight behind Groomfest was not because I think it's the only way, but because the male side and the groom side of getting married has just been excluded for so long that I thought maybe an event called Groomfest would go some way to just kind of shift the needle towards everyone, because all of the language in Groomfest was towards couples, And on the night, there was, I'm going to probably say, 45% female. And that's cool. And so it was a really good night. But we really tried to shift the needle on how we talk about getting married. And we just did it from a male, you know, groom point of view. And it was a good night. But I'm forever thinking about how do we communicate to couples and just so we can include everyone.
So true. So true.
So topics we were going to address in this issue, but I'm going to click stop recording soon. And we might even just record two or more over the next day or two to, and we'll just kind of put them in the pipeline. I wanted to talk about the fact that we've got a conference coming up. And it's, and I actually did want to address, because I wanted to talk about the business of running a conference, just so everyone could kind of look behind the scenes and see how and why and whatnot. And because it would be amazing to see some people there. And you and I run a very open, authentic business. Like, there's no real big secrets. And so I'd love to talk about that.
Yeah, cool.
And also what's actually going to be a conference, because we will have to see you there. It's August on the Gold Coast. And you can find more information at the website, celebrant.institute, and click on conference in the menu. But the other thing as well, and I think this will be a whole episode on its own, considering we can talk about language for an hour, is an article that came out on the ABC this last weekend about celebrants making a full-time living. To quote the actual article, and Face ID can't identify me because I've got a microphone in front of me. That the key points in the article is that the civil marriage ceremonies make up 78% of Australian weddings, and the peak industry group, COCA, says that there are so many celebrants, it's hard for them to make a living, and it wants a moratorium on new celebrants. And Sarah and I have got many thoughts on that, and we're going to call this a tease, where we say that we have thoughts on it, and there'll be more after the break.
Which could be a week.
Yeah, well, we'll try and record them.
We'll record them, but your after the break is not just an advertising break.
No.
You're not going to, like, pee for an ad break and then coming back and you're getting our thoughts on full-time celibacy. That'll be, like, in a week.
Sarah, it's so good to have you in the little dungeon here.
It's all been a pleasure. Thank you for letting me into your space.
Celebrant.institute is our website where you can read our articles, become a member, listen to previous podcast episodes. But there is a website, celebrant.fm, which is just our episodes, and that's where we send people to subscribe, find the links for the phone you're on or whatever it is. And I actually did want to address, someone said to me a while ago that they said it's annoying that I'll listen to your podcast and I can't do anything else on my phone at that time. And I'm like, oh, you've clicked the link from Facebook and you're just listening there, which is a perfectly cromulent way to listen to the podcast. But there are podcast apps. And if you're on an Android phone, you should have the Google Podcast app installed. And you can look up Celebrant Talk Show in there, and we're there. And on the Apple phones, you can get Apple Podcasts, Celebrant Talk Show, we're there. And all those links are at celebrant.fm. So if you go to celebrant.fm, no www, no .com, just celebrant.fm, and look for the app that you use. I use Overcast. That's my favorite one. You can subscribe on Overcast. And there's Pocket Cast, there's Stitcher, heaps, and others, and so many. And so you can find an app that you love, or just use the default one on your phone, and subscribe there. Because when you listen in the app, you can then do other things. And you can listen on your Bluetooth in your car, or you can, you know, listen on the home stereo, whatever. You can AirPlay it to things. It's good. So celebrant.fm has got all the links for the different phones and different apps and different things. And I think you can possibly even go, hey Google, and say listen to the Celebrant Talk Show, and it should work.
Cool.
I'm gonna try that.
Okay,
actually, hang on, let's try it. So up behind you there's a Google Home, so can you just hold the microphone near that?
Let's hilarious give this a shot. Hang on a second,
have we got enough? You have to take the headphone off. Okay, let's give it a shot. Hey Google, play the Celebrant Talk Show podcast.
Okay, playing the latest episode of the Celebrant Talk Show. You gotta know when to fold them.
Yeah! And wait, does it play? Yeah! God, what a time. Hey, Google, stop. God, what a time to be alive.
That's so cool. Oh, my God, hilarious. I don't have one of those. That's so funny.
Google Home's great. I love it.
Yeah, I don't need any more gadgets. I have enough gadgets.
Believe me, you need more gadgets.
If you want to send us an email, hello@celebrant.fm, we will answer it sometime. Thanks so much for listening. We love you all. Talk soon.